Dimensions 2. Author, Life, J. Erickson. Audiobook version, April 21, 2025. Copyright 2022, Millennium Publishing Company, United States of America. All rights reserved, including the rights of reproduction in whole or in part of any form. This is a work of fiction. Names, characters, businesses, places, events, locales, and incidents are either the products of the author's imagination or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, places, companies, or actual events, past, present, or future, is purely coincidental. Chapter 1. Row after row of ashen gray military equipment lined a field. The equipment was new, shiny, and ready to be plunged headlong into battle. Pickup trucks and troop transport vehicles, artillery and motorcycles, tanks and tractors. The equipment had been ready to use but wasn't supposed to be deployed until later. This was the spare equipment to replace the leading military might. A military might that had been destroyed on a planet. The ashen equipment all had the red markings of the Syndicate, the symbol that had come to represent terror, oppression, and destruction throughout all the dimensions. In an arena near the field where the equipment sat, thousands gathered in anticipation of what was being called one of the most critical speeches in Syndicate history, maybe one of the most important in dimension history. The arena was oblong, a field for sports, but the grass was trampled by the thousands standing around the stage set up in the middle, all waiting for the opportunity to see and hear from the Supreme Administrator. Ashen banners displaying the red insignia of the Syndicate hung all over the arena as people waved the flag of the Syndicate. A large stage area with a podium had been constructed in the center of the field, facing the west, towards the main office buildings of the City of Commerce. The stage was ornately decorated with trimmings representing some of the most remarkable cultures in Earth's history. The Greeks, Aztecs, Russians, Germans, Zulu, Persians, Romans, Egyptians, Mayans, Chinese, Mongols, English, and Americans. Flags of all nations were draped over the edges of the stage. As the crowd became restless, waiting for someone to arrive and begin the ceremony, they noticed movement at an entrance gate. A group of Syndicate director troops in ashen bodysuits, metal masks, and capes flung over their shoulders started walking down a narrow aisle. Hidden amongst them was Vice Administrator Abra, walking with a limp and a cane. Beside her was Battle Commander Leah Hastings. Leah carried a large gray automatic rifle and had a pair of pistols at her side. She wore a bodysuit beneath a formal military jacket, a contrast to the custom-made business suit that Abra wore. The two women were excited for the speech, knowing this would rally the troops for another offensive campaign. As the two women took their places on the stage and the director guards took positions, everyone held their breath for the Supreme Administrator. He was the one who would deliver the message that they were all longing to hear. The crowd looked at the entrance, but Supreme Administrator Moirai wasn't there. They couldn't see him in the arena. A thumping noise could be heard as they waited in the distance. A thump, 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 like something was chopping the air. A helicopter. As the crowd looked up, an ashen-colored helicopter with the red symbol of the Syndicate on the doors flew over the arena. It made a pass and switched directions, making another pass over the top of the open-air arena. The chopper came back around and hovered over the platform, causing the women on the stage to duck in cover. The air was swirling around them as the door to the chopper slid open. The helicopter was getting lower, only about 20 meters above the stage. From the door, a figure could be seen. Moirai. The Supreme Administrator jumped from the chopper, rope connected to a harness, rappelling from the helicopter to the stage. When the Supreme Administrator landed on the stage, he quickly unhooked the harness and gave a curt chopping motion with his hand, signaling the chopper that he was on the ground and free of the harness. The crowd erupted in cheers as the helicopter flew away, and Moirai flattened out the wrinkles in his custom-made, custom-tailored, three-piece ashen business suit. Moirai looked at his diamond-encrusted golden watch to mark the time as the crowd continued to cheer for him. As Moirai smiled at the crowd, removing his sunglasses to get a better view of them before putting them back on and stepping up to the podium, a dull ache in the scar from his eye to his mouth reminded him of what was at stake. "Welcome to the dawn of a new era," Moirai's silky voice boomed through the massive sound system, every word heard and felt by the people in the arena. "An era marked by the influence of the Syndicate." The crowd went wild with cheers, chanting Moirai's name. Banners and flags waved in all directions, and the roar was deafening. Moirai smiled as he held his hands up, trying to calm the crowd. "As I'm sure all of you know, we suffered a setback," Moirai boomed as the crowd booed. "This happens to all the most powerful governments from time to time. A simple miscalculation is all. These Goths, this gathering of the Hollow Shadows, think they can dictate Syndicate policy. This minority group thinks they can tell us how to do business. These Goths think they can tell us which worlds and dimensions to go to." The crowd was riled with boos. Insults and horrible things were being said about the Goths. The military troops in the arena were ready for a fight. "They have a right to their opinion, but they are wrong," Moirai said. "We, the Syndicate, will lead the dimensions into the new era. They are backworld terrorists who don't want to live in a modern age, a modern society. The governments of the past failed, so we decided to take a new direction that would lead to peace and prosperity. Never before have so many people been lifted out of poverty. Never before have so many people found the good life. It is the Syndicate that has led to this, the Syndicate that has brought this wealth to people. But now, friends, the Syndicate has suffered a major blow. Our board of directors was on the planet of Nazarene when the Goths blew it up, when they blew up their home world. My wife was with them. A young commander, a brave and bold young man, saw the danger that was coming, and he acted. He didn't wait. He acted and saved thousands of Syndicate troops. He saved hundreds of commanders, and most importantly, this man saved me. I want to bring this man out here today, who deserves the highest awards and accolades. Please help me welcome Azrael Miguel." From the gateway, two people emerged. Intel Officer Carivo Lamour, a lank brunette in an ashen-colored military dress, was escorted by Azrael Miguel. Azrael, a big man with a bald head and glasses, was enjoying the crowd's cheers. He was barrel-chested, with muscles bulging from his arms and neck. He wore a tight, sleeveless black shirt, Syndicate insignia on the left breast, and his ashen military pants. Carivo was making flirting eyes at Azrael, enjoying being on his arm. The pair slowly approached the stage, stopping to shake hands with some of the troops lining the aisle. All the troops wanted to be like Azrael, receive a high award, and be in an upper position within the Syndicate. No one knew precisely what Azrael would get, but they knew he would be a significant person within the Syndicate from here on out. As the pair arrived on the stage, they shook hands with Moirai. Once the crowd had settled down, Moirai returned to the microphones and said, "He is with his special lady, Intel Officer Carivo Lamour. Carivo will also receive an award today." Her actions alerted Azrael to the situation. She helped his